He was not once in evidence at the house of Mrs. Rhett, who lived in the same city with him for years, yet he manifests in the house of a young man who did not come to the city until 3 years after his death. As will be seen presently, he made his personality quite well known, and eventually proved at Rochester that we had talked together at Detroit. During this seance, Jenkins said, "The more you study this subject, spiritism, in the earth life, the more ready are you to progress when you pass over to advance in spiritual life." February 3, 1909. 10 to 11 a.m. Atmospheric conditions very good. 90. Music for a few minutes, and then we waited a short time. It was quite 15 minutes before I heard the trumpet moved, and then my guide spoke. She was followed by my father. These communications were not evidential. Dr. Hudson followed. He promised to try and carry my message the following day to Mrs. Georgia at Rochester. He said her play would be a great success, and will be much appreciated by the public. Events proved that this was only partially true. In the following month, a well-known manager in New York bought her play, her first. But, so far, I have not heard of it being put on the stage. I inquired how it came about that Iola, who had been in spirit life over 34 years, was not able to identify herself so well as he, who had only passed over about 6 years. A. Because I studied this subject on earth, and when I left it I took great pains to find out more about it. Q. Is it correct that you have, in spirit life, a sister called Hester and a brother called William? A. Yes. Q. Can you name anybody except Mr. Hodges who can confirm that at Detroit? A. I cannot recall just at present. Then came Dr. Jenkins, who spoke for some time. Among other things I asked him, Q, how is it that my guide cannot answer anything important about her identity? Meaning at Geyser's seances. When an important word comes, her voice, hitherto clear, goes off into an indistinct sound. A. You are very anxious to hear and she to give the word. This causes you both to become positive, and the vibration is upset. Your relative is, as it were, looking through a cloud, and can only see indistinctly. February 4, 1910. 12 noon to 1 p.m. Atmospheric conditions very good. In company with Mr. Hodges. 91. Voices, alleged to come from the following spirits, spoke with us: Mr. Hodges's father, Iola, Clytina, Sir Isaac Newton, Dr. Richard Hodgson, and Dr. Jenkins. In the case of Mr. Hodges's father there was nothing evidential. Iola did not add much to what she had said before, nor did Clytina. The latter said, "Alvida's is here." As a test, this was not of great value, as the medium was well aware of Mr. Hodges's 4 years' sittings with Mr. Cole, during which Alvida's was the chief communicator, and surrounding entities, Diaca, idle and frivolous spirits, would probably make use of this knowledge. The important features in the sitting were the visits of spirits purporting to be Sir Isaac Newton and Dr. Richard Hodgson. The former assumed an old, feeble voice. He said to me, "Sir Isaac Newton, I am pleased to be able to come. Since I passed over I have been studying the laws of gravitation, light, and colors, and I desire to impart this knowledge to the world I have left. It could be done if the proper circle could be arranged and conditions were good, in the same way as was done when the spirit who has just been here, Clytina, communicated her messages to your friend. The forces are becoming used up, and I cannot stop long now. Good soft hyphen by. Q. One moment, Sir Isaac. Can you tell me, in a few words, what is gravitation? A. Gravitation is a force generated by the rotation of the globes through ether. Q. May I take it that it would be covered by the term electromotive force, and that the ether is, so to speak, the armature? A. That would cover the matter very nearly. Goodbye. I cannot, of course, assert that my visitor was Sir Isaac Newton. In fact, it appears, on the face of it, extremely improbable, but I can that the psychic was incapable of inventing this novel theory of gravitation. I had heard of it from one man in England, who is now working upon this hypothesis. As far as I know, no American has initiated any theory of the kind, and only one man in this country. This man is sanguine of success, but, as yet, has not published a single line regarding the matter, with the exception of his immediate family. I question if there are 10 people who are aware of the nature of his studies. Personally, I do not see how he can be correct, for scientists have informed us over and over again that the ether of space is frictionless. If it were not so, it would appear certain that the globes would soon cease to rotate. It was, no doubt, to the presence of Mr. Hodges that the visit of the spirit purporting to be Sir Isaac Newton was due. He has been engaged for years attempting to wrest the secrets of nature from the Greeks of past ages, through the mediumship of Mr. Cole. After Sir Isaac left, a voice came through the trumpet, "Dr. Richard Hodgson." I said, "I am delighted to see you, I have often wished to do so." Yes, I have tried to impress you on 3 occasions. Q, please try and tell me something that I do not know, but which Hislop or some other friend knows. Not long before my death I had a conversation with Hislop, when I told him I thought I should be the next of our society to leave this sphere. There were a few other questions and answers, but they were not of public interest. Dr. Hislop tells me that he does not remember the above statement of Dr. Hodgson in the form in which it is put, but of course they had many conversations when the future life and change to another state of consciousness were the theme of discussion. Dr. Jenkins, the medium's control, said that Dr. Hodgson was away trying to impress a light medium in another place, to whom I had sent a message. A few hours before I had concentrated on the message to Mrs. Georgia which I hoped that Hodgson would carry. He also said, he, Hodgson, is preparing some good tests for the time when you sit again at Rochester. Mrs. Georgia and I had agreed upon a date and time for the above message. It was sent from Mrs. Rhett's house at the time arranged, allowing for difference of longitude. Mrs. Georgia was entirely ignorant of the nature of the message, and of the city I should be in at the preconcerted date. The message was not carried as I had written it, but there is a knowledge shown in Mrs. Georgia's script of my doings, and general evidence that Hodgson was with me. See Chapter 5. On this evening, February 4, 1909, at 5:15, Mrs. Rhett came to my hotel, at my invitation, to see the picture of Iola in the pale lavender dress. She told me that she had asked her control, Dr. Sharp, why he was not present at the morning's séance. He replied that he had been occupied in helping Mr. Moore's friends to go to him at 12 o'clock. She wanted to know what this answer meant. I told her that at the time mentioned I was with Kaiser. I found that the two psychics do not know one another, they live over 2 miles apart, and may have met in the same room, but are not on those terms which would lead to interchange of experiences with clients. I need hardly say that I did not supply either of them with the dates and times of my visiting the other. February 5, 1909. 9:50 to 10:45 a.m. Atmospheric conditions not very good, a thaw, clear overhead. My visitors on this day were my brother-in-law, Iola, Dr. Hodgson, Dr. Hodgson, and Dr. Jenkins. 92. Iola told me she had seen me the previous night reading the message. It is a fact that I had taken up the message which I had tried to send in the morning, and read it carefully over in my room at the hotel. This was by way of emphasizing the impression on Mrs. Georgia. Hodgson was strong. He said he had carried the message, but thought the light had not taken it all in. He knew he had impressed her, but thought she only got part of it. Then he went on to say, I have been trying to render the conditions good for you. Q, I want to find out by normal means who Hester Hodgson is, and who William Hodgson. A, that is what I mean. It is some time since I was known here, and I have failed to impress anyone. Q, well, I have it from you that Hester was your sister and William your brother? A, yes. Hodgson came fairly strong. Q, can you give me a test of your identity? A, yes, when we met at Boston, at Mrs. Piper's, I said in her presence that when I came over this side, if allowed to communicate, I would try and improve the conditions for her. Q, I did not sit with you and Mrs. Piper. A, no, no. I said that in Mrs. Piper's presence. As a matter of fact, I never sat with Mrs. Piper, but I think this statement, made on February 5, 1909, has something in it, for this reason. In page 2 of Proceedings of the Society for Psychical Research, June, 1909, I find that Professor William James writes, Hodgson had often during his lifetime laughingly said that, if he ever passed over and Mrs. Piper was still officiating here below, he would control her better than she had ever yet been controlled in her trances, because he was so thoroughly familiar with the difficulties and conditions on this side. Dr. Jenkins made himself known last. Q. Apostrophe please explain about realms and spheres. A. I will try. We can explain a little to you about the first 7 spheres. You could not possibly understand me if I tried to explain anything about vibrations beyond that. The spheres are not separated by strictly defined lines of demarcation. Realms are conditions, and you recognize the realm a person is in by the color he or she wears. Each sphere after the third has certain realms. Q. Then, if I am told that a person is in the 6th sphere and 7th realm, and that her dress is the color of pale lavender? A. That is quite correct. The first sphere is one of darkness, not material darkness such as you understand it, but ignorance and absence of desire to rise. When a spirit once forms a desire to rise, it begins its progress towards a higher sphere. Q. Do these earthbound spirits in the first sphere impress those on earth for bad? A. They do. Q. But I presume that they cannot do much physical harm? A. No. Q. Is this on account of their ignorance of the higher vibrations? A. Yes. Jenkins went on to say, the thoughts of mortals are very powerful. Supposing you want a certain spirit to come to a séance, or to be with you, all you have to do is to think of them, concentrate on them, a few minutes before. Q. The amount of success depends, I suppose, upon the rapport between you. If 2 people have been much attached to one another, they could establish rapport quicker than strangers? A. Yes. Dr. Jenkins, Kaiser told me, was a doctor of divinity and Methodist minister. He passed over about 1894. He was well known to Kaiser's father. He was turned out of the ministry on account of his spiritualistic views. This seance ends my experiences, on that visit, with Mr. Kaiser. I have not been able to record everything that passed here. Many minor messages I forgot before I could make notes. It was possible only to put together the salient points in each sitting. It will be observed that there are some contradictions and differences of opinion between Sharp and Jenkins. Private messages from Iola and some others have been omitted. On January 10, 1909, I went with Mr. Hodges to the house of Mme. Julien de Limont, 922 Cass Avenue, Detroit. The mediumship of this lady is of a peculiar kind. She has 6 empty globes on a stand, one in the center, much larger than the other 5. When conditions are favorable, these 6 globes become full of light simply through the psychic placing her hands upon them. On this occasion the atmospheric conditions were bad, it was raining hard, nevertheless the large globe was slightly, and one of the small globes almost fully, illuminated. After this manifestation there were whispers through a trumpet. Dr. Kurgan spoke to Mr. Hodges. When they had finished their chat I asked the spirit, when you spoke to me yesterday, how did you know that I was acquainted with Mr. Hodges? A. Because I saw you talking to him. Q. In his office? A. Yes. The room was dark, and there were 6 or more sitters. Towards the end of the seance one gentle soft hyphen man, who was known to be a psychic, said to me, Sir, I see the form of President Lincoln standing behind you, holding an open book in his hand. For the last few days I had been trying to recollect a certain passage in Walt Whitman's Ode to Lincoln. Not a soul beside myself knew this. I had never set eyes on the speaker before that evening, and then only for 5 minutes in the light. I could not help attributing this to something more than mere coincidence. 2 days later I found the passage I required in the public library of Toledo. Chapter 9. Third visit to America. Return to United States. Objects of my visit, Mrs. Georgia ill, Mrs. French still has power, though in her 80th year, Mrs. Ross E. Her psychometry, Miss Ada Besnett, singing and whistling by spirits, spirit lights, a heavy table lifted off the floor, the singing of Omayont and Iola. Mrs. Rhett accompanies a party to a seance with Ada Busnett, her clairvoyance, very good test to Mr. Xander, Black Cloud's method of announcing his departure from the psychic, talking through the trumpet, automatic writings by the psychic, Professor Hislop, he does not admit the possibility of materialization, more seances with the Johnsons, Grafy there again, the antics of Viola, her disappearance from one spot, and instant reappearance in another, the striking materialization of Catherine, discovery of the partial solidity of spirit forms, Edna, the nun, privilege accorded me by Viola, Mrs. Rhett attends a Johnson seance, and her control, Dr. Sharp, comes to her, I hold the coat of a partially materialized spirit, warned by my guide not to repeat a certain experiment, the Newton's children appear, and give a pretty test, Dr. Sharp again manifests to Mrs. Rhett, Greyfeather, I want my shadow here sitting alone with Mrs. Johnson in the cabinet, materialization, only of scientific interest, tests with the Bang sisters, picture test successful in 2 days, letter test takes 3 days, depletion of the mediums and of myself slate writing through the mediumship of Mr. P. 0. Reela, no evidence of identity, but proof of the presence of invisible intelligences, return to England. On December 10, 1910, I left Southampton to pay a third visit to the United States to study psychical phenomena. During the previous 20 months I had, of course, discussed my American experiences with many people, but chiefly with a conjurer whom I believe to be the most modern and clever of his trade, who furnished me with over 100 explanations on different points. There was not one of the many suggestions offered to me that met the cases of spirit action I had seen. Each explanation was more wonderful than the spirit hypothesis. No doubt those who argued with me were at a great disadvantage. They were totally unacquainted with the electrical conditions in the States, with the country, and with the psychics whom I had seen. However that may be, the effect on my mind was to strengthen my belief in the genuineness of the phenomena, and I left England without a single doubt of what I had seen in 1909. But, at the same time, resolved to put all suggestions to the test whenever an opportunity occurred. The main objects of my third visit were, 1. To interview my guide through the mediumship of Mrs. Georgia and Mrs. Rhett, especially to try and discover what her occupation was, and what were the duties of other members of my family and friends in spirit life, 2. To see what development had been made in the mediumship of Miss Ada Busnett, the famous young psychic at Toledo, and, 3. To have some experiments with Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, not, indeed, to test their honesty, of which I was already fully assured, but to study more closely the tangibility of the forms, and particularly their methods of dematerializing, which had so much astonished me in 1909. As I thought an opportunity might occur to spend a few days at Chicago, I wrote letters ready for experiments with the Bang sisters, and put paper inside for reply, sealing the envelopes in such a way as to render it impossible for them to be opened in a normal manner, and in a short time, without detection. I also purchased a chemical and some ink, which was secured in a traveling bottle with spring. The application of the chemical to the ink would prove instantly if the ink of the replies to the letters was the same ink as I put on, or near, the slates. On arrival at New York, I proceeded to Rochester, which I reached on December 20, 1910. I called upon Mrs. Georgia the following morning, and found her dangerously ill. The next day she was removed from her residence to a hospital. So critical was her condition that it was found necessary to perform a very serious operation upon her in 1 hour, and it was found that, had this operation been delayed, she must have died in a few hours. I remained in Rochester till December 28, when Mrs. Georgia was pronounced going on well, and then proceeded to Toledo, Ohio. While in Rochester I had 2 interesting experiences. On Thursday, December 22, 1910, owing to the kindness of friends, I sat with the venerable Mrs. French, now in her 80th year, and heard the voices of Red Jacket, Dr. Hossack, and Bro. Riley. They were feeble, but the wonder is that we got anything at all, considering the advanced age and failing health of the psychic. There were five people in the semicircle, and it was 50 minutes before any phenomena occurred. In the psychic riddle, Dr. Funk has given such a full description of what happens in the presence of Mrs. French that it is superfluous to add any further testimony here. 93. On Christmas Eve I visited a psychometrist, Mrs. H. E. Ross E. Grew, to whom I was a perfect stranger. She had only been 3 days in the city. I wear a locket on my watch chain, and I took this off and gave it to the lady. Very soon she said, "This has not always belonged to you. The spirit of a lady came with you into the house. I get her character." Then followed a faithful description of my wife, which could not have been more accurate if she had known her 20 years. This was followed by a fairly accurate account of some events in my own life. Then she returned to the subject of the locket. "The former owner of this is not in spirit life. She is far away from you, far away. She is not very strong. She is feeling she must come back to you." More about myself followed. Q. What is inside the locket? A. I hear, it was mine, but it is not I. The rest of the reading was of little interest to my readers. The locket was for over 30 years the property of my wife. After she had given it to me, we had a portrait of Iola put into it. The spirit said to be in the room was that of my wife, who was asleep in England. It, the locket, was mine, but it, the picture, is not I. The time when this was said was 6:30 p.m., New York time, which would be about 11:30 p.m., English time. My next séance was at Toledo, with Miss Ada Besnett, on Friday, December 30, 8 p.m. She now lives with her adopted parents, Mr. and Mrs. Murray Moore, at the Coleman, 1923 Vermont Avenue. The other sitters were Mrs. Murray Moore and Mr. and Mrs. Z. The familiar spirits who were in evidence were Maud, a sister of Mrs. Moore, Emma Yount, an old school friend of Miss Ada, Bartrada Maria, the Whistler, Leonore, Black Cloud, Indian, and Dan, who is the psychic's principal guide. I soon found that Miss Ada had been much developed during the 2 years that had elapsed since I last sat with her. I sat on the right, and controlled her right hand. Directly the light was put out, the table moved 2 feet, and opened in the middle, where a leaf can be put in. When we were fairly settled, a voice came directly in front of me, "Iola is here." A song was started on the graphophone by Mrs. Moore, who attended to the instrument, and a spirit, said to be Gina Yount, joined in with a loud, rich voice, filling the room with sound. This voice appeared to me to be about 3 feet distant across the table, and on a level with my head. Then followed various songs from the graphophone, accompanied by spirit singing and the magnificent whistling of Pietro, which appeared to me to be even louder and richer than it was 2 years before. The Z.S. had brought with them many new records, and the spirit singers and Pietro seemed to be just as much at home with them as with their old familiar songs. A little hand, half the size of my own, stroked mine and my knees softly. I held it once above the table, and tried to keep it, but it wrenched itself away from me upward. There was no dissolving. An Indian spirit called Silver Moon gave a fine war whoop from the ceiling. Mrs. Z.'s ring was taken off her finger, and put, as far as it would go, on my little finger. Mrs. Z. told me that considerable force had to be used by the spirit, as her ring was very tight. In a few minutes it was taken from me again, and returned to Mrs. Z. There was much talking through the trumpet and singing in the direct voice independently of the trumpet. When this took place, the latter was laid on the arms of one of the sitters. None of the singing emanated near the psychic. My left hand was pressed down on the medium's right hand several times by a feminine hand, said to be that of the spirit Leonore. During the conversation, the table was frequently shaken, as if to simulate convulsions of laughter. These demonstrations were always very apartment, invariably happening when some comical remark had been made. Several spirit lights were seen. The graphophone was often stopped when a record was put in which the spirits did not like. On one occasion, when Mrs. Moore went out of the room to fetch a record that we asked for, the instrument was started and stopped several times by the spirits. A tambourine was wrung out of my hand, as it had been 2 years before. Towards the end of the seance, the psychic spoke in trance, and described an old relative of mine who passed out in 1904. This speaking in trance and automatic writing are new developments of Miss Ada. After 2¼ hours, the seance came to a close, the young psychic coming out of trance in 3 minutes without distress, apparently normal, and able to join in general conversation. I propose to continue the account of my observations of Miss Ada Besnett without regard to consecutive dates in the narrative of my education, and then to give accounts of my sittings with the Johnsons and the tests of the Bangs sisters. The most mysterious and convincing of all my experiences, those which brought me into closest touch with the next state, are related in the next chapter, entitled The Voices. There is no phenomenon so rare and so effective as that of the direct voice, whereby an investigator is brought, so to speak, into the very antechamber of celestial life. The phenomena exhibited in the presence of Mrs. Rhett, both in quantity and quality, exceed in value any other experiences I have and my notes. Not one half are recorded, for private reasons, but such as I have been able to make public will form an appropriate genus to the narrative of facts I have witnessed in my search for the truths of immortality. 94. Saturday, December 3, 1910. With Miss Besnett. Sitters, Mrs. Murray Moore, Mr. and Mrs. Z, their nieces, and myself. On this occasion the circle round the table was complete. The atmospheric conditions were very good. I controlled the psychic's right hand. Mrs. Moore, as before, attended to the graphophone. She was often interfered with by the spirits, who stopped the instrument whenever they did not like the tune or song being played. When the lights were first put out, the table was moved a foot, and opened where a leaf should go if required. Then the spirit, singing and whistling, in accompaniment to the graphophone, went on for about an hour. The singing of a Mayonde was specially fine, it appeared to come from about a foot above the center of the table. The same magnificent whistling took place. Mrs. Z.'s ring was taken from her hand to that of one of her nieces, and then brought to me, where, as on the previous evening, it was put on my little finger. It remained there 10 or 15 minutes, and was then returned by Leonore to Mrs. Z. Little Hans stroked my hand and my knee several times, and once a hand touched my shoulder. Presently I felt a little hand playing with my locket. Controlling Miss Ada's right hand with my left, I reached down my right hand under the table and felt a small hand, less than half the size of my own, apparently trying to remove the locket. I asked, "Shall I assist you to unclasp it?" Answer, one knock on the table, indicating no. After the locket had been fingered about 15 minutes, the motion ceased. I put my right hand down again, and found it gone. It was handed round to each member of the circle, and then returned to me open. A number of spirit lights appeared round it the moment before I was allowed to hold it. I asked, "Who has been doing this? Is it Leonore?" A. One knock on the table. Q. Is it Iola? A. Three knocks, indicating yes, then a whisper through the trumpet, "I tried to show you my face in the locket. Before this I saw, dimly, the form of a woman bending over me with her hands on my shoulders, or trying to do so. Miss Ada's control, Black Cloud, bashed my left hand with his. Many times a gentle feminine hand pressed my hand down on the right hand of the medium. Silver Moon gave a loud war whoop from the ceiling. When the seance was nearly at an end, the table, which weighs over 100 weight, was lifted clean off the floor 2 or 3 inches for a second. February 2, 1911. With Miss Ada Besnett and Mrs. Moore alone, 7:30 to 9 p.m. on this evening there was a great display of spirit lights. Iola tried to show her face by these. I dare say there were, at different times, 100, about the size of a quarter dollar, not one emanated from the medium. One song was sung 3 times by Oma Yont, and also by Iola. We had other songs and whistling, with and without the graphophone. 3 new spirit singers made themselves known. Leonore spoke several times through the trumpet. The psychic was brought out of trance, very suddenly, by Black Cloud, her Indian control, and taken into the drawing room, where she was made to lie down on the sofa, Black Cloud muttering all the while through her lips. As she passed round the table, among the chairs in the pitch-dark séance room, she never stumbled, nor came into collision with any furniture. 95, Friday, February 3, 1911.